A Christmas Eve sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on December 24, 2001, entitled The Paradox of Christmas. The texts for the sermon are Luke 2, verses 1 through 4, and 1 Corinthians 2, verses 23 through 26. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
An evening like this, in a place like this, with people like you, really shouldn't be ruined by talking. But then, I've never been known to give up an opportunity. So for just a few moments, think with me about the paradox of Christmas. And the paradox of Christmas to which I would point this evening is the fact that here we are, and this beautiful evening once again, with an evening full of magic and mystery and wonder. And we have come to this point, finally able to breathe once again, perhaps let out a big sigh and know that, we made it through that season once more. And here we are now to celebrate it, to enjoy it, to let its magic wash over us, simply to take in the beauty of these moments, and once again, to kneel at the manger of Bethlehem. The world's a softer place at Christmas. It always strikes me, even for those who have totally secularized the story, there's something nonetheless that makes a difference in the human spirit at a time like this. It does have an impact on us, and that seems to be broadly the case. The paradox to which I point is that on Christmas Eve, in this beautiful setting, in these moments full of mystery, we have also a table set. A table set that soon will have upon it bread and wine. It'll have bread and a cup. And then, in a few moments, we'll come together here in order to receive that bread which will have been broken, and that cup which will have been poured. And a table set with bread and cup, broken and poured, points to death. And not any death, but a violent death. That was made poignantly clear to me a couple of years ago when John Dominic Crossan was here and said, when blood and body are separated, that is indication of a violent death. One who dies in one's own bed does not have the separation of the body and the blood. And so the paradox of Christmas Eve, where we celebrate around the table of our Lord, is that we have washed over us all of the quietness and the wonder and the beauty and the softness of which this season is so replete. But we do so with bread broken and cup poured out, pointing to the violence that was experienced by the Word that was made flesh and dwelt in our midst. And so the beauty of Christmas already points us to the darkness of Good Friday. And the beauty of Christmas is the beauty of the gift of the one who came, the child, the Word, the eternal intention of God that was embodied in Jesus, and in the beauty and the magnificence of that life, that light which was a mirror image of the heart of God, and the fate of the embodiment of the intention of God was crucifixion. The word that was made flesh at Christmas was the word who cried out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me, in the darkness of crucifixion on Golgotha. That's the paradox that I'm thinking about this evening. Incarnation, the Word made flesh, seeing the revelation of the light of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ, and then knowing that that divine intention embodied came to grief, came to violence, came to death. And one could despair about that, for that one truly good life lived with authenticity, calling for justice, practicing mercy and compassion, the very embodiment of love, that one crucified. God's intention killed by the likes of us. Tonight we could despair about that unless we remember that the Christmas story was written after Easter. The Gospels were written through a rear reverse angle lens. The story of this marvelous birth and this night full of mystery with angels and a star and a stable, those stories were not naively and simplistically written before the darkness of Calvary. They were written after Calvary and after Easter, after they had experienced that the one who had experienced violent death was indeed with them still. So that the gospel, which means literally good news, is the fact that the divine intention that was embodied in Jesus that came to violent death was somehow or other moved through death to ongoing life and light, so that the last word is not death but life, not darkness but light. That's why John, in his opening lines of his gospel, speaks about the light shining in the darkness and the darkness not being able to overcome it. You could also translate that, not able to comprehend it. The world can't quite figure it out. But those who wrote the Gospels, those who told the story initially, were convinced that the light that was the embodiment of the divine intention in the beginning and went through the violence of death was shining nonetheless. And so the paradox of Christmas is that this beautiful story was written in spite of the fact that Bethlehem's child became Golgotha's victim. And it is a strong statement of hope, trust, and confidence that what came to expression in the Word made flesh could not, through the evil designs of humankind, could not possibly be snuffed out. And I suppose that's why we come back to Bethlehem year after year after year. And why we have to come back to Bethlehem year after year after year. Someone has written, everyone has his Bethlehem, sounds of new beginning, where hope is born and possibility looms large, where history is invaded by newness and memory, given birth to faith. Come, let us go to Bethlehem to hear the word that comes again into our world, to see the light that shatters its long darkness, to know the God who meets us where we are, to feel the life that throbs, the life that becomes the one made flesh. Come, let us go to Bethlehem. For the light shines in the darkness, and it will shine. And each time we return, no matter if it's a 9/11 world, no matter if it's the world of Imperial Rome or Herod's threatened existence, somehow or other, tonight we know again that in the end, it is God. In the end, it is good. In the end, all will be well.